Hello and welcome to the Off Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances and I'll be your hostess. Hello, good morning. It's Monday, January 17th, and this is episode 30 of the Off Kilter Quilt. Yay, yay. I hope you're having a good Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I think we're going to be having a quiet day because Will appears to be sick, but that's okay because, it's not, it's sad. It's a horrible thing that my child is sick, but he's playing on the PlayStation, so I think he's not, like, on the verge of a real crisis, but I do have a lot of quilting and, sadly, cleaning to do, so having a quiet day is okay. I want to say thank you to everyone who commented on the last episode and everyone who entered the giveaway. It was great to hear from people. And let me tell you, Sue is our winner. And weirdly, I got an email from Sue this morning about the postcard exchange. Thanks to everyone who's interested in that. I'm going to be getting, if I haven't gotten a postcard out to you, I will be getting one out to you this week. And Sue had emailed me about the postcard exchange, and I emailed her back, and then I did the random number generator, and Sue was the winner. So that felt a little strange. Like, oh, I've been in contact with this person already today, and she's just got some luck going for her. So I'm going to get that out to you, Sue, this week. Thank you for entering. Thanks to everyone. And I'm going to try to do some more giveaways because it feels nice. It feels nice to give things away. It really does. And I got all kinds of things I could give you, actually, but they're non-quilting relating, and you probably don't want our 11-year-old version of Candyland. You don't probably want that. If you want an old Candyland, let me know. You don't, and I guess I should keep it so that when my children come home years from now and they say, oh, look at this old Candyland, or when I have grandchildren, they can be as freaked out by the little Candyland figures as I am. I liked the Candyland we had when I was a kid. Every new version gets kind of weirder and freakier as far as I'm concerned. Game stays the same, but the graphics just kind of like, wow, that's a weird plum. What is the plum person? I don't know, but it's all kind of weird. Anyway, that's a digression. Thanks for comments. I got a funny comment from Noni. First of all, I got an interesting comment, as always, from Noni, talking about timing herself as she's quilting, because in the last episode I talked about how I was timing how long it took me to make these Simply Amy, Simply Frances blocks. And she said that she actually kept notes on how long it would take her to do like an entire queen-sized quilt. And she estimated it at about 120 hours. That would be an interesting project to do, just to keep a log of your quilting time, just to see. Again, none of us are being timed on how fast we work. But it is interesting to know. And, you know, if you become a famous quilter, start selling your quilts to understand how much time you've put into a quilt and put a number value on that time. Why not? We're all about money, aren't we? No, we're not. But, okay, so Noni said that, and I thought that was interesting input. But she also, man, she kind of threw the gauntlet down in the knitting versus quilting debate. Her comment was, knitting. Are there any knitting museums? None that I know of. There are quilt museums, or at least collections in most states. There are multiple quilt historians. Have knitting patterns except for a few? Irish fishermen's sweaters survived over centuries? No, but quilt block patterns have. When you make a quilt, does it ever not fit? I never made a sweater that fit. Quilting beats knitting hands down. Now, I love that. No, so far, all my quilts have fit, and I have made plenty of sweaters that didn't fit. I will say there are knitting patterns from way back that my guess predate quilting patterns by several millennia. They're old Mideastern socks. You know, it's a very old craft, and there are patterns that are very, very old and that have lasted centuries. I don't know of knitting museums, though. You've got me there. I wish there were. You know, there are textile museums, and I think there's one. Well, there's, you know, a museum I really want to go to in New York is the Folk Art Museum. I really want to go to the Folk Art Museum. And I think there's also a textile museum in New York City, and I would love to go to that. And that, of course, will have fabric, but also I would think some knitting. The problem is with any kind of textiles, cotton-based or what have you, wool-based, they don't last, and that's the problem. So there's not a lot of examples. There's, you know, as we know, quilts don't last either. But anyway, but no, I don't know of any knitting museums. Do you know of any knitting museums? If anyone's ever heard of a knitting museum, let me know. There's probably some online knitting museums. But it is true. Quilts, I think, I guess you could argue that maybe knitting is so utilitarian. It's so, you know, it's fashion and function that knitted stuff actually gets used. Not that quilted stuff does, but it's so rare that someone hangs a pair of socks up on their wall, whereas I bet most of us listening to this podcast have quilts up on our walls that are not being functional, that are decorative. And I have no problem with that. I like quilts as art. I believe in quilts as art. And I think there are some people, here's what I think is really cool, is guerrilla knitting. I really want to get involved in some sort of guerrilla art movement. I just got this book out of the library on guerrilla gardening, where these people just go to, you know, sort of public spaces that they think need sprucing up and plant gardens. I love the idea of guerrilla vegetable gardening, although I actually need to establish a really good vegetable garden in my backyard before I go off like to the median strip on the highway and start planting tomatoes. But I like stuff like that. And, you know, there's guerrilla knitting projects where people are just sort of knitting public art and, like, you know, and knitting projects that they're hanging up sort of anonymously and, you know, common spaces, and I think that's very cool. I just don't, you know, these are all people who don't have children. That's, you see, you read these projects like, oh, I want to do that. I want to knit a cozy for a tree out on down on Main Street. And I'm like, when would you have time? You can't even finish your husband's birthday socks. When would you actually have time to knit a tree cozy? You know, I think you have to be like 20 and no kids, and you have, you know, some, you're working in a coffee shop and you got some time on your hands, and I'm very happy that the 20-year-olds are out there doing the guerrilla knitting and the guerrilla gardening, and it's an impulse that I totally relate to, and I love public art, and I love random public art especially. I have had the idea, sometimes I go take walks out in Duke Forest, which is a great, I don't know how big it is, but it's lots of trails and whatever, very close to where we live. And lots of, you know, it's a forest, so there are trees, and the trees have little nooks and crannies. And I've actually thought about it. It'd be fun to type up little poems, you know, like short little Carlos Williams poems, and put them in a little scroll and then stick them in, you know, the nooks and crannies of the trees, and so people could find poems as they walked. I've never done that. I have a million ideas. Don't get me started. But guerrilla knitting. Because Noni. So that's what my question, Noni. Where's the guerrilla quilting? Where is the guerrilla quilting going on in this country? But you do have, you have some points about the quilting. I love both. I don't have a pony in this race because I love both quilting and knitting. I am, by the way, making some progress on the man's second birthday sock. Once you get the sock on the needles, you're good. With socks, the risk is never getting the second sock on the needles. I've never done that. I've heard about second sock syndrome. I tend to finish a pair of socks that I've started. They're so easy to do. Why not finish? So I do have it on the needles, and I'm making progress. And then I only have, you know, 10, 11, 12 more pairs of socks on my list of socks to make for other people. So another comment from Kristen asking if I've read Liberated Quilt Making or Liberated Quilt Making 2, which she got for Christmas. I did. I got Liberated Quilt Making 2 for my birthday this past year. And in fact, I've been, as I've been thinking about what I'm going to do next, as I approach the finish of Simply Amy, Simply Frances, I've got a couple quilt diaries in today's episode, and so you will hear all about my progress. I've been looking through Quilt Making 2, and I love it, and there's some stuff I may do. And I have read Liberated Quilt Making. I think I talked about this really early on in podcasts that may not be available on iTunes anymore, but I think still are on my site, on the blog site of Off Kilter Quilt. That Liberated Quilt Making was a very important book to me because it was the first book, quilting book I ever read where I thought, oh, I can do this. You know, I don't have to be like the most precise person in the world, because you know what? I'm not the most precise person in the world. It's possible I'm the least precise person in the world. That has occurred to me. But so that was a very, very important book for me. I got it out of the library, and then when I looked for it again, it was it had been stolen. So I went to the library website, and yeah, something like missing. It was reported missing. I'm like, someone stole this from the library and probably, hopefully, made a donation to the library anonymously or something for it, but because they didn't want to spend $50. It's really expensive now. But yes, someone stole that from the library. And I'm hoping that one day I'll be like at a flea market or a used bookstore and find a really cheap copy, because it was such an important book to me. And Kristen also, she said, I heard on one of your podcasts that your mom is buying or bought a baby lock. I think that baby locks are one of the most overlooked machines in the quilting market. Everyone is always talking about Berninas and Janome's, but I love my baby lock. I'm sure your mom is probably buying a higher end one that I have, and I bet she'll love it. And I think she does. I think she's enjoying it. She's got it. And I think my mom is doing a lot of sewing, a lot of quilting right now. I'll get a complete baby lock report from her and report back to you. But that's interesting, because you know what? You know, I've heard of baby locks. But you don't hear the kind of baby lock love that you hear for Berninas and Janome's and other things. So thanks for that affirmation from Kristen. I'm sure my mom will be happy to hear it. Rhonda says, just found your blog and your podcast. Plan on listening for the first time today while I'm working on my first rule-breaking art quilt for the Alzheimer's Project. And Rhonda, glad you found the blog and the podcast. And I would love to see what a rule-breaking art quilt for an Alzheimer's project looks like. It sounds fabulous, and I'm send a picture, and I'll post it. I still don't have a Flickr group. That's still beyond me. One day, we'll do that. But for now, I think a lot of other people, I think Jean over Quilted Cupcake and Sandy over Quilting for the Rest of Us, and maybe Sarah, Stash Resolution, they have Flickr groups. So, and I think that a lot of us are listening to the same podcast. We're part of, I think, a large podcast community. And so we can find each other's quilts through these kind of people who have some technological abilities to actually post photographs to Flickr. And Corinne writes, this year I'm going to be a selfish quilter and keep at least one project, or selfish crocheter, but just not a selfish knitter. I'm so horrible at it that even I don't want something I knit. Oh, now that's funny. That's good. So, Corinne, are you still knitting and then just kind of giving it away to unsuspecting victims or dropping it off at Goodwill? I know what you mean, though. When in my early days of knitting, I gave it all away very proudly. And now I see, I'm like, oh, my Lord, I can't believe I gave anyone that. That's just horrible that I would do that to another human being. Okay, you know what? I'm just checking my time here. It's at 46 minutes. I'm as usual eating my tail. I have finished recording the quilt diaries, and now I'm doing the introduction. So I'm going to finish up here and you just get into the meat of the show. Let me say, I love hearing from you. Thank you for your comments. And you can email me at fdowell@mindspring.com. You can go by the website. The blog is at offkilterquilt.podbean.com, and you can come over to Big Tent and get involved in the discussion there for the quilter super group. You know what I'm talking about. If you don't, just go to Big Tent and search quilters. I don't know why I can never remember that. I just can't. But anyway, on with the show. I think I've said everything I need to say in the introduction, but thanks again. Congratulations, Sue. And keep your ears open, because I'm going to do another giveaway soon. So bye for now, and enjoy the Quilt Diaries. Quilt Diary, Day 1. It's Friday, January 14th. And I haven't been keeping a diary all week, because I've not done any quilting all week until today. And today I just thought, you know what? I'm finishing this sucker. I am finishing these blocks. I'm doing it today. I'm not going to do any knitting. I'm not going to do any reading. I'm not going to talk to my children. I'm just going to finish these blocks. And I did. just finished about 5 minutes ago block number 36. I'm so excited. I'm so ready to do something else. Well, I will be doing something else. I will be sashing and chunking. That's what comes next. I think when I get everything sashed and chunked and the whole top put together, I'm going to put a picture of it online because I'm going to need your help in deciding how to quilt this. I love the stippling. I loved stippling that last, the girly girl reading quilt. Loved stippling it. I'm not sure this is a stipple quilt. So I'm going to put it online. I need feedback. How best to machine quilt this. I will be doing my own quilting. I just got an email from my mom wondering if I was going to send this out to the long armor. But no, I'm going to do it. I have confidence after my successful stippling of the girly girl reading quilt. I think I can do whatever it is I want to do. But I don't know what I want to do. So you're going to have to help me that way. This is big. This is so big. I have got 28 of the blocks up on my design wall, otherwise known as my design flannel, up on my bedroom wall. I'm sitting in my bedroom right now just looking at these blocks, my 28 blocks, and the pile of 8 by my side. I'm going to take all the blocks into my study because the 28 blocks fill up the design flannel. It's not big enough for all 36 blocks. So I'm hoping that my study floor will be big enough. Because I don't want to take it downstairs because then the dog's going to walk on it. And that's going to be irritating. So I'm going to take it in my study and then figure out how I want to arrange these blocks. I've got the popsicle blocks, the dark blue, the light blue, and the lavender. Got to figure out how that's going to get put together. This is the problem with doing a quilt sort of by the seat of your own pants is that no one's telling me what to do at this point. But I'll figure it out. I'll find something that I'm happy with. It'll be fun. It may take a couple days. I'm kind of hoping it'll take 15 minutes. But, you know, sometimes you just have to try one thing and walk away from it for a while and then come back in the room and go, and change a few things around. I got some good feedback on what to do with my non-wonky blocks. And it seemed like the majority opinion was to keep them, try mixing them in and seeing if my eye landed on them, and that's what I have done. And you know what? You don't even notice them. They just if they're all together in a row, you do, or I do. But when they're mixed in, you don't. Then they just seem part of the scheme. I did get a comment from Margaret with an idea. She said, "If you have enough white fabric, could you slice off a wonky diagonal strip from each block, which would cut through the middle patch at an angle, but close to one side, perhaps the last side you sewed on, then sew a white strip on that side of the block and square up the block. This would unsquare the middle patch." And I thought that was a good idea. I don't think I'm going to need to use it, but if I really were bugged by these blocks, that might be what I would do. So thank you, Margaret. Margaret, what do you call it? Her tag, her name, her ID, her, I don't know what you call it, but it's Knitwish. So I know she's a fellow knitter. Also, she read Sweater Quest and agreed with me that it was a bit thin. And yes, I think that is a generous assessment, ultimately, of the book. So always good to have a fellow quilter knitter listening. So thanks, Margaret. Well, that's the main thing I wanted to report. I'm excited. I'm excited, and I'm excited to get sashing and chunking. So my plan is, okay, to put this on the study floor and get it to where I'm happy with it. Then I'm going to take a photograph of it so that whatever arrangement I have, once it gets messed up, which it will, I will have a visual reference to remind me which block goes where. I might even do something with tape, like painter's tape on each block, to suggest where the block goes in the order of things. I am really excited to be at this part of the process. I can't wait to sash and chunk. I can't wait to see what it looks like. I mean, I know that I have a long way to go from here. I know this, but I'm getting closer. And when I get the top done, I am going to take a picture of the top and post it because I'm going to need your help. Yes, you, dear listener, need to help me because I don't know how to quilt it. You know, I loved the stippling with the girly girl reading quilt. I enjoyed that so much. And if I thought this was a quilt that called for stippling, I would stipple. But just looking at the blocks right now, I'm not sure that's what it calls for. So I'm going to post a picture and then you can tell me what you think I ought to do. I am going to machine quilt it myself. One thing that right post Christmas, I feel like I have no money to send it out to a long arm quilter. Also, I like machine quilting. I'm enjoying it. I want to continue learning how to do that and get better at it. But I wish this were a stipple quilt. I wish it just screamed out, "Stipple me!" But it does not. So you need to tell me what to do. But that's a little bit a ways in the future. The other thought I had was, I really can't wait to do something else. You know, like a completely different kind of quilt. Because I love how these blocks look. I think this is going to be, if I don't like totally screw it up, it's going to be a fabulous quilt. It's going to be neat and I'm going to be pleased with it. But I want to do something else. I am ready for something new, boys and girls. I just am. So what else do I have to tell you today before I go start with the arrangement of the blocks? It's been a good day. I feel like I think I had to do 6 blocks today and I got them done. I just got on it. Like, this is what I'm doing. I took a break from writing today. I'm working on a revision, which I'm almost done with, but I'm at this place. It's not that I don't know what to do or where to go next. I do. That's the nice thing about revising. You have so much more to work with and have such a straighter and truer direction than you do with the first draft. But I've been working really, really hard and really consistently every day for several hours. And, so I just need to be away from the manuscript for a day or two. So today seemed like a good day to do that. And the man and I went to the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh and went to see the Norman Rockwell exhibit, which has been there a couple months and leaves in 10 days. So we thought it was time to get there. Actually, it leaves in 16 days, but we still thought it was time to get there. It was interesting. I kind of, you know, I love Norman Rockwell. I love how he paints. I mean, he's a master. He really is. And so many of his images really give me pleasure and are delightful. And I think when you take them singularly, I think he does this amazing job of catching very sweet and often true moments. I was looking at a cover of the Saturday Evening Post. They had one room of the exhibit was just given over to framed covers, all of his covers from the Saturday Evening Post. I actually thought it was a really stupid use of space. Quite frankly, I could go online, I think, and find a site that had every single Norman Rockwell Saturday Evening Post cover and look at them and probably get a better look. Or I could go to the library. I'm sure there's a book that's his all those covers. And I could look at them without being in the same room with 100 other people trying to look at all these covers, not be so visually overwhelmed by all of them. And it just, you know, it's too much. It's too much. There were a lot of covers. He did the covers for a long time, starting in the 20s, you know, through the late 60s, early 70s. But there was one cover I was looking at. And it was like from 1958, and it's a famous illustration. It's that there's a girl who's just lost a tooth, and she's standing with two friends, and they're kind of leaning forward, and she's pointing at the gap in her mouth where she's lost the tooth, and they're leaning forward, and you know, it's funny. One of the girls is wearing a dress that looks like exactly like a dress I would have worn to school 10 years later. But then, you know, but it's a scene that there's something about it that's delightful and that you can imagine today. There's somebody, you know, my son Will's in the second grade, so he's kind of in prime tooth losing time. And so you can imagine the little girls in his class, like one coming in and saying, she's pointing to her mouth and saying to her, "Look, I lost my tooth." And the kid's getting excited because in second grade, kids still get really excited about stuff. It's very neat. So, and so Rockwell does that with all kinds of, you know, of illustrations in all sorts of different ways. And they're funny and there's something true and not sentimental, I think, very often. But at the same time, you know, so when you look at them that way, you know, they're often, again, very, very pleasing images. But I think a lot of people look at Norman Rockwell paintings and Saturday Evening Post covers, and they say, well, that's how we used to be. That's how things used to be. I wish we could go back to when life was like that. And that, to me, is what kind of drives me crazy. And also sort of like, that's when America was great. And it's like, you know, Norman Rockwell lived in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, which is a small town and a very, you know, actually fairly rural part of the state, if I recall correctly, from my years in Massachusetts. And, you know, he took images from a pretty narrow slice of life, and they were delightful images, and he was a brilliant painter. And but it hardly gets at the totality of life or American life. And moreover, the things that are delightful in those paintings are things that are still delightful today, in terms of when families are very happy to be together, or children say funny things or make interesting discoveries or get in trouble. All that happens. But you know what Rockwell never painted the darker side of things, and that's fine. I mean, he was an illustrator. He wasn't going to, you know, paint the drunk mother burning the hole on the couch with their cigarette. I mean, that, you know, the people, the editors of the Saturday Evening Post were not going to run that cover. And that's not what he did. And he was a commercial artist, and he was painting for money, as many great artists have done all through history. So there, you know, I don't have a problem with that, but I do have a problem when people start developing this kind of nostalgia for this America that's really, again, there was no time when everything was great. There's never been a time when all people were good, or even good people were 100% good. You know, we all have dark and light, and Rockwell just, for the most part, didn't paint the dark. And, you know, and he also, you know, it's a very, his America, which is not America, which is Stockbridge, Massachusetts, is very white. And that's what Stockbridge was. And you can't blame Norman Rockwell for that. And he did try, you know, I think there was something about the civil rights movement that very much stirred him. And that he did, you know, that if he has any sort of social justice art, that's what it's about. There's a painting in this exhibit, it's very different from his other paintings, but it's about Goodman, is it Schwerner and Cheney, the three young men who were in Mississippi. I think Cheney was the young black man who was from Mississippi, and the other two were white and were from the Northeast and were murdered. And, you know, and it's a very striking painting. I had never seen it before. I didn't know it existed until there was an article in the newspaper right when the exhibit opened. And talked about that, but it's Cheney has been shot, and one of the other men is holding him, and you know, I mean, it's pretty bleak and dark, and you know, and again, something I think really moved Rockwell's spirit to paint that. But it's really, and it's interesting because in this exhibit, they gave a lot of space to it and to the sketches he did, and you know, he had models and would photograph and to get everything exactly right, as if somehow this were really, I mean, it's a very striking painting, not only for the painting itself and the subject matter, but the fact that it's a Norman Rockwell painting. But nonetheless, he really wasn't a social justice painter. He really was something else, and he was great. What he did was great. But I don't know. I've just been thinking a lot about it because as much as I really like Norman Rockwell's paintings, there's also at the same time I felt a kind of discomfort, and I realized it was that I think that his work is used to talk about an America that never existed, but those kind of moments that he paints do exist. You know, they're just not the cumulative, you know, people say, oh, look at all this. This is how we used to be. It's like, no, I don't think it works like that. So that's my thoughts on Norman Rockwell. And now I'm going to go arrange my blocks and get back to quilting. See you soon. Quilt Diary Day 2. Today is Monday, Martin Luther King Day, and it is the 17th. It's 9:11. I'm having a different kind of morning than I anticipated because my son Will is not feeling well. He was supposed to go to a basketball camp this morning, And he woke up and his stomach hurt, and I think he's got a fever. And since he spent the night with his friend Wynn on Saturday, and Wynn now has 102 temperature, I'm thinking he might be sick. Do you know, I didn't do flu shots this year. And actually, I've never done them. I don't think this is terrible. My kids don't get sick a lot. And that's not a good reason not to do them. But Will hates shots so much. Jack is like, he has this amazingly high threshold when it comes to pain. So Jack, I could whip out to the wherever you go. My kids don't get sick a lot. And they never got ear infections. Just the sort of childhood stuff that would get you to the doctor quite a bit. And so I don't have a doctor routine with them, you know, so I don't even know where to get a flu shot. Will we go to our regular pediatrician's office? I barely know our pediatrician. Isn't that terrible? Except my kids don't get sick, except for colds. I mean, they get colds and fevers, but like my friend Danielle, her kids like get ear infections all the time, and they've got asthma, and they've got all this stuff. So she and her pediatrician are like best friends. You know, they're tight because they've been hanging out on a, you know, monthly basis now for close to 11 years, where our pediatrician lives actually in Carrboro, where we lived when Jack was born, and that's how our pediatrician became our pediatrician. And we just never switched. So all that to say, my children have not gotten flu shots, and Will so hates getting shots that I've sort of put it off. And now if he's got the flu, I'll feel badly about that. And if he doesn't have the flu, this might be the week. It's not too late to get flu shots. And apparently they have a lot of doses hanging out there. So anyway, so Will is sick. And I'm not even dressed. It is 9:13, and I'm in my jams, which I don't actually like to do all that much. Around Christmas I do, but it makes otherwise I feel kind of messy, and I do feel a little messy. But I realized that Will wasn't going to be going to camp, and I realized I didn't have to get dressed and put on some makeup because I was planning to pop by Target after I dropped Jack off at basketball camp. I mean, Will, off at basketball camp, but now I'm not doing that. I may still run over to Target later. I'm getting very obsessive. So we are meat eaters. We are carnivores in this household, but I'm pretty obsessive about getting organically raised meat. I try to actually get our meat at the farmer's market, but we eat a lot of turkey sandwiches around here. So I've been getting that, I think it's Applegate organic. The problem is that the Harris Teeter, it's $5.99. At Whole Foods and Target, it's $3.99. And I can't bring myself to buy it at Harris Teeter, even though, you know, because I stop by Whole Foods and Target often enough. I just need to buy 10 packs and put them in the freezer. But I was at Harris Teeter the other day. So I'm in North Carolina. This is our big grocery store chain. And I thought, if I buy 2 packs of this turkey, I'll end up paying $4 more than I would if I bought it at Whole Foods or Target. And I said, well, I thought, well, but you know, it costs gas to go over there, and you don't have a reason to go over to Target right now, and blah, blah, blah. But I just was psychologically unable to pay the $2 more per pack. The fact is, I need to just order a big, big old organic turkey breast from someplace and cook, you know, roast it and cut it up and freeze it. I'm going to do that one of these days. I really am. So it's Monday. I've been doing a little quilting. You would be so impressed at the progress I have made on Simply Amy, Simply Frances. In fact, I think I'll be close to having the top done today. I don't know. I don't know how long the borders are going to take me. And I don't know the border. There's a white border and then a thin color border and then I think another white. And I don't know what to use for the thin color border. I actually want to use, I've got lots of popsicle fabric left over. Do I dare? I have to say the man has been looking at this and he really likes it. He's like, oh, it's so, you know, it's so modern. It's really, and it is. It's a very modern quilt. It's a very fresh looking quilt so far. And the fact is there's a ton of white. So you don't look at it and think, oh, pink girly quilt at all. You think, oh, modern and, you know, fabulous and whatever, but not girly. And I'm thinking, man, I've got all this popsicle fabric sitting here. It would look really good for the second border. And I just ought to do it. Just take that risk that the man will live with it, that it will not be too much pink for his manly and masculine sensibilities. We shall see. So that's what I'm thinking. So if I don't have to go buy more border fabric, I've got tons of white, because when I did the calculations for this quilt, I bought, I think, about a football field's worth of white, Moda white. It's very nice white. I will be using it for years to come, which is fine because, you know, I like a lot of white in a quilt. So this is good. No problems with all the white. I'm just feeling stupid because I can't do math, but you know, some of us can. It was so sweet when I was home at Thanksgiving. And I said something about my really poor math skills. My dad said, oh, you know, I don't think that's true. I think you just, when you were in high school, you had test anxiety. And that was your problem with math. I'm like, no, I have huge synoptic glitches when it comes to math. So sometimes I could do it. But I mean, it's a joke in my family. My kids sometimes will help with, ask help for help. Well, Jack will not ask me for help with math homework anymore. He's doing pre-algebra. He knows he's way beyond me. But even Will, who's in second grade, they do this, they have a weekly sheet called Sunshine Math. And it's hard, and he'll ask me to help him, but he'll with reservations. He's like, I'll get dad to check later, or I'll just say, are you, you know, and sometimes I help him and he gets it wrong. So, you know, it's something going on in my brain or not going on in my brain. So yes, I have a lot of white fabric, but it does look good. I do think I might be able to finish this up soon. I am chunking. Chunking is an interesting process because it really is like putting a puzzle together. And how do you keep the, you know, finding the best way to chunk is, I think it's just going to take practice, because sometimes I'll make a move and go, you know what, that's not good. You're going to have a really, really long seam. And I've actually ripped out some seams because I've realized that I've chunked myself into a corner, but I'm getting it, and it does. It's a much better way than I used to do. And you know, and then the other great thing about using so much white is the blocks really do float in it. You don't notice when the seam lines don't match up perfectly. But for the most part, I'm doing a pretty good job. So I am very happy with this, and I may even if I get around to it, I've got it on the dining room table right now. On what I've got, so I may, before I post this episode, which I hope to do later today, at least take a picture of what I've got so far. I'm happy. Last night, I went to my first Modern Quilt Guild meeting, which I know I've said that I wasn't going to do, and I don't need to be in two guilds, and it's a terrible time, and it is. It's Sunday 5, and this was a long meeting because there was some officer election type talk going on. So it was 5 to 7. I think usually it's 5 to 6:30. And unfortunately, I had to leave right as the show Intel was starting. But I liked it. I enjoyed it. What's happened, first of all, is Jack has started going to youth group for church on Sundays. And that goes from 5 to 7. So, you know, our sacrosanct Sunday dinner is a thing of the past, but that's okay because I want him to do youth group and he seems to really like it. So that kind of opened up Sunday afternoon for me to go to this. And also, you know, I was looking, I picked up the most recent McCall's. And McCall's, that's where I got the Simply Amy pattern. And, you know, I was looking through that issue, which must have been from last summer, last spring, of McCall's quilting, with the Simply Amy pattern, and there were several patterns that I liked, and I picked up the most recent one, and there was maybe one pattern. I don't think I'll do any patterns, but it did make me think, you know, and I've talked about this before, where my eye is just very drawn to the modern quilts, and I really like them. But the other thing, too, that kind of pushed me out the door to go to the modern quilt meeting was, you know, I'm 46 years old. I don't know where the other 46-year-old women are. Are you 46? And do you find when you go places, everyone is either way older than you or way younger? No one else seems to be 46 who's doing the things you're doing. So I go to church. I go to Duke Chapel. It's a mainline Protestant church. And, you know, I'm on the, I would be on the younger if you took out the students, because there are a lot of students who go. So that demographic, on the one hand, kind of, it's sort of like students, really old people, And me and my family. Like, you know, because I think everyone else our age is going to, who goes to church, is either not going to church or is going to the evangelical mega churches. So we are the last middle-aged Protestant, mainline Protestant churchgoers left, I think. You know, I go to the Durham Orange Quilt Guild, which is very nice, and there are some younger women there, and there was some overlap between last night's Modern Quilt Guild and the Durham Orange Quilt Guild. There's some younger women from the DOQ who were there. But at DOQ, again, I'm young. It's not the worst thing in the world. On the one hand, to go to these places, you're like, wow, I'm really young. I'm really vibrant and good looking and whatever. But sometimes you're like, why isn't anyone my age here? So at the Modern Quilt Guild, so I just felt like, you know, and the thing is my sensibilities are kind of more modern. I thought it'd be fun reading the McCalls on Saturday. I just felt like this isn't speaking to me in a general way. I would really love to find some quilters who are kind of interested in the kind of quilting I'm doing and more non-traditional quilting. So I went to the Modern Quilt Guild meeting. It was very fun. It's a smaller group. There were probably 20 people there in that neighborhood. I think they were saying that they've got like 80-some paid members. So this group, the triangle is Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, Cary. There's a lot of little towns. Too, and a lot of people there were from Durham, which doesn't surprise me because, as you know, if you listened to last week's episode, Durham is one of the 41 places you need to visit in 2011. If you do come to Durham, let me know. I'd love to see you. So, of course, all the funky, cool quilters live in Durham. Really, a lot of them are from Florida. We did introductions. A lot of people originally from Florida, and a lot of them had driven over from Durham. So, anyway, and there were some older women. There were women older than I was, and there was one woman who I would say was probably in her 70s. She had very cool clothes. She's like, oh, I want to get to know her. She was very cool. But there were definitely women in their 20s, too. So it was just more of a staggered demographic, which was fun, you know, to not feel like I'm the oldest person here, I'm the youngest person here. I felt very firmly in the middle. I felt it was possible that someone else there was 46. I really did. So it was fun. People, you know, quilters I just find to be very friendly, funny people. And there was lots of laughter and sort of talk of what we might do in the next year. I did join. I'm now officially a modern quilter. And talking about who we might get to come do a workshop. And Denise Schmidt was discussed. Apparently she's pricey, but there's a lot of dues money in the bank because they haven't spent it on anything. So who knows, maybe we'll get a Denise Schmidt workshop. So it was nice. Now, in the introductions, it was funny because it came up. So the outgoing president is Kat from Thimble Pleasures. And I like Kat, and I think it's very cool that Thimble Pleasures, that there is someone working there who has this very modern and funky sensibility, which she does. And she's clearly a good president. She did a good job of running the meeting, but she did say something, and this has come up with me and Kat before, although she doesn't know me from Adam, but about people coming in and not being able to choose fabric. And there was a little talk of like, yeah, why would you be a quilter if you didn't like fabric? And so when I introduced myself, I said, well, you know, I've come in and asked you for help and you haven't given me help. And it's not because but I don't need help because I don't love fabric. I love fabric. I just need help. And she was very apologetic. And I said, no, I understood where you were coming from, because her thing is you should choose what you love, trust your instincts. Which I get and I think is great, and I think that people shouldn't be scared. The thing is for me is I can pick out good fabric, but when I've gotten help, like when Karen's helped me, she's shown me stuff that I wouldn't have thought of. She helps me pick out great stuff. And so that's what, you're spending a lot of money and you want to make a really great quilt. And so anyway, so Kat and I talked a little later. She's like, I hope I wasn't rude. I was like, no, you weren't rude at all. And I understood where you were coming from. But at the same time, you know, those of us who want help, and it doesn't mean we don't love fabric, we do. We do. And a lot of women said that, too, that they said that it was just useful to have a second pair of eyes. And Kat was like, yeah, I could see how that would be, and I'll try to be more helpful. So anyway, but I'm like, you know, later, this is so typical me, I'm like, did you have to the very first time you're at the meeting, did you have to go, yeah, you know, you really pissed me off the last time I was in here, which I didn't say, of course, but I'm like, did you have to kind of call out the president of the guild saying, boy, I wish you'd been more helpful to me, or I don't know, but I always do stuff like that. I'm really... Sometimes I'm good in public, you know, and sometimes I just need to be sitting alone in a corner of a room someplace because everything that comes out of my mouth is really stupid or inappropriate or unintentionally offensive. And so, yeah, when I left last night, I'm like, oh, Lord, just shut up. Just shut up. But at the same time, I did feel like I wanted to stick up for people who need help with fabric because some of us do. And it's not that we're morons, but, you know, we're learning. We're still learning. So overall, my experience was very nice, and there were just some really nice people there and friendly people, and people, again, who seem to be my age. And that's kind of what I'm shooting for, because I just don't believe I'm the only woman in this country who's interested in quilting, or God, or all the knitting, or the various things that I'm interested in, born in 1964. There have to be more of me, and I'm searching them out. So I've had a good quilting weekend. I've been catching up on my podcasts, on other people's podcasts, which is always fun. Catching up with Noni, and I think spent Friday night catching up with Sandy. So, and now I've got Sarah over at Stash Resolution to get me through today. So that's good. Oh, and caught up with Pam over at Hip to Be a Square. It's fun. I hope, you know, if you're thinking about doing a podcast, I think you ought to, especially very sad news. Jennifer over at Patchwork and Pacifiers has given up the ghost. She put up on her blog, she said, two kids is just too much work, and she's not going to blog. And she said that she's given up blogging, podcasting, quilting, and knitting. She's giving up all of it. Which, I mean, she does. She has very young children right now. And you could see that, how it would just be impossible to get stuff done. But she's such a creative spirit that I hope she'll come back to it all. But that made me sad. But then I remember how it was having little kids. And, yeah, it's very hard. And her children are pretty close in age. So that was sad. And that is a hole that needs to be filled. So if you've been thinking about podcasting, now is the time. It's a new year. Join the conversation. Well, I think I'm going to wrap this up here and then turn around and go do the introduction and try to get this posted this afternoon. I'm feeling very quilty and feeling good about feeling quilty. How about you? I hope so. I hope this is a great work for you, a great week for you. And you get a lot of quilting done or a lot of thinking about quilting done. And, you know, I hope everyone's really nice to you this week. That's my big hope for you. Wouldn't that be a great week? Oh, yes, indeed. Including your children or your cats. Yes. All right. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.